Okay, everybody, welcome into another episode of the Good Bit Podcast. It's lovely to have you with us one more again here in this lovely, lovely afternoon. Trying to move the bloody wire. We've started already. You're actually started doing a happy dancing, the fact that we've started recording and you're moving all the wires. What's going on here,
man? You've never told me not to move the wires before.
Well, because we're sitting kind of, we're only using the one camera this time, everybody. We're going
being lazy.
We're going lower tech this time. And we're just a bit close. Well, just a bit off a close.
Hello
everybody. How are you? Nice to see you on this fine Friday.
That is a Friday.
How's your week been?
Oh, my week. What's happened this week?
It's only been a few days, you know.
I know. It was a good week, kind of.
Your life sounds so exciting right now.
No, it's actually really boring right now. I'm not really doing much.
This is a week where we had a date night and you're saying this is boring?
We did have a date night. It was a lovely date night. It was actually really nice because it was like the good old days of meeting up, going for dinner and then going home to separate houses.
That's literally what happened. When we first met, we wouldn't see each other at all.
All those years ago.
And, we'd go for dinner and then we'd go home to separate houses. Yeah. It's because of COVID and stuff. We had to go back to separate houses. Not now. But back then, we're feeling fine now. Yeah, we had a very special date night during the week, everybody. We try not to, you know, disclose the fact that we are in a relationship. but we had a very special one this week because we had our first trip to the cinema not my first one ever, but my return trip as a Cineworld Unlimited member, everybody.
Ooh.
We bring it up all the time on the podcast about kind of being like, oh, see, when I had my card, it was so much better. So... And, you know, since I let it lapse through the second lockdown, I believe it was, because I had so much time. Basically, what happened was I was on this yearly subscription. I was paying it yearly, right, for the cinema. And it was, at the time, £19.95 or something a month. So the yearly one was like £150 a year or something like that. And I was going all the time. I was going every week. And then when lockdown happened, Cineworld froze all the accounts. Because obviously the cinemas were shut, right? So it was like, as soon as they're back open, we just resume, essentially. But because I'd been paying a yearly one, I wasn't paying monthly. So if it froze, it didn't really matter. So they owed me like 9 months on top of what I was getting paid I was paying for. Uh-huh. So I had 9 months free to use after lockdown.
Right. Okay.
But when it first opened, it wasn't really like full guns blazing again. And it's not really was like, there wasn't really a lot of coming out because it was getting back to normal and stuff. There was loads of streaming stuff.
Yeah.
They were showing kind of classics at the cinema. So I think my first film back, I think, was either Back to the Future or something like that. I think I did like a double cinema day. I went to Back to the Future during the afternoon, then something else in the evening.
Did you not do Batman or something in the cinema?
That was The View because along this time as well, the new View cinema in Glasgow opened with all the fancy seats.
Yeah, and seating nooks. Yeah.
So we went to Riot and the Last Dragon there. That was in 2021, I remember.
Still
that one.
Still not watched that.
Rachel really likes it. My sister, she really likes that one.
Never watched it.
I liked it quite a lot, actually. But what I remember from that day, you know how we have these, you know how these obscure memories?
Oh, yeah.
Is that it was the night before was the last time I played football. Because I'd played football and I don't know if my boots were too small for my feet, but they destroyed my feet. And they were doing loads of like work for the car park at the cinema.
Yeah.
So my dad dropped me and my sister like miles away from the cinema and I had to walk and I was like limping. So I remember that more than the film itself. But you're right, we did go and see the Dark Knight trilogy in the cinema, but that was The View. But that was a great experience.
Oh, sorry.
I took you to see Jaws at one point at the cinema after lockdown.
You did.
That was at the Fort. So it was just... It was a bit weird just getting back to cinema. So I just was like, I'm not using this. We're going to The View a lot more because of the fancy seats and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have my driver's license by then either. So it was difficult to get to. So I just left it lapsed. The 9 months came and gone. Hardly used it.
That was it.
And I was really sad. But we were there recently seeing The Iron Claw, which we're going to talk about in a couple of weeks' time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was there and then we saw the advert or we saw it on social media, but it said that if you were to rejoin the Cinema Unlimited team, then it's like so much cheaper now and they've put the cinema that we would go to in a group.
Yeah, well, it was like, I'd mentioned it because I was doing the podcast more, so I've, you know, trying to entertain the thought of possibly getting a cinema card or just making more of an effort to see more different kind of movies and films.
And what was the original reason why you didn't want to get the card?
Original reason was that if I got a Cineworld card, that that would then just become our date night. That'd just be a really easy, and there would be no effort to
on
really,
both of our parts. It's not as if it would
really
just be me
like,
being lazy.
Make time to spend with each other, because we don't live together. Thank God, no, I'm kidding. We don't live together, and it's nice. I like missing you, but like I didn't want it to be like, oh yeah, I'll just get cinema. Like I like being able to, like, if we go for dinner or whatever we're doing, if it's the theatre, like getting a bit more dressed up, making an effort to see you.
Listen, we can dress up for the cinema. I'll sit in row F with a suit on. I don't care.
And then just the more we spoke about it and the more I'd thought about it, the more we kept, it's like your phone listens to you, the more we just kept seeing stuff right. about the price of the Cineworld card. And
then we saw the advert that it was $10.99 a month, which is significantly cheaper than it was before.
Mm-hmm.
So... And the price of a single ticket, if you go on a Monday to Wednesday, it's £5.50 for a ticket during the week. If you go on another day, it's £6.99 for a single ticket, which again is actually great. It was the reason why people were leaving the bigger chain cinemas and going to The View, which is a relatively new company, past 10 years or so, I think. So they were always cheaper tickets, but their concessions were more expensive. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it was fine if you just took your own stuff, but, you know, it was like... Making up for it.
Do you remember going into the cinema? I remember this so clearly. Like, it's never been a rule, as far as I know.
What, sneaking stuff in?
Yeah, but you're not allowed to take in your own, like, snacks or crisps mm-hmm. or juice. And being one of four girls, like, if the six of us would go, including mum and dad, obviously, would go to the cinema, it'd be really expensive already for tickets. So we would always go to the shop, and we'd go to The View at Hamilton, and we'd go into the Big Asda beside it and get our snacks and then walk along going to the cinema. And I remember always being really nervous that we're going to get caught out.
I still feel a bit
like
that.
Taking in snacks or juice and be like, no, you can't go in with that. And we'd like hide. We'd be leaving the house and everybody would be like, who's got a handbag that's big enough that I can put my juice in? And I just remember that. So
it's
cool.
Still a thing. I mean, it's no more.
Is that a rule?
I think it used to be. Now it's just socially accepted, but I still feel bad almost. I mean, it's an absolute daylight robbery sometimes. You got a regular popcorn and regular drink mm-hmm. for £11. It was.
Yeah. That was to share. That wasn't just for me, by the way, but I bought it.
Say, for example, if like we weren't a couple and we were two like people that loved popcorn and drank loads of juice and stuff like that, and we both got one each.
I love popcorn.
£22 for, do you know what I mean? That's ridiculous.
They need to make money as a business.
They need to make money. And what we used to do when I used to go with my friends is that we would go to the shop across the road and we'd get our wee snacks and stuff and go in that way. But even if it was like a bottle of something, mm-hmm. I would still put it in my pocket.
Yeah, you're still trying to hide it. Yeah.
But now it's not so bad because they have a Starbucks in the big Cineworld, and even like most cinemas make coffees now and stuff. So I don't feel as bad going in with a coffee
because
I bought it there, you know. Don't know. But moral of the story is we're back. You're here for the first time.
Yes.
And I did not, before anyone's making accusations, I did not talk her into it. I did not. This was actually her idea.
It was my idea.
Because it was cheaper and we're going to the cinema more and stuff like that. So that means we can hopefully go back to the way we used to do it, or at least I used to do it, and go see those really obscure films that no one's heard of. I want to speak to Ian, another panellist. I wrote that the other day when I was putting one of the social posts up. I was like, the good bit panel. Sounds so official, doesn't it?
That's a good way of saying it.
Another person that comes on the podcast a lot is Ian.
Yeah.
And I want to talk to him about doing like a top five, like obscure films that you saw and have forgotten about at the cinema. I think that would be quite a funny one. So yeah, that's happened.
He'd pick the most random stuff that nobody's ever heard of. And he'd talk to you. Oh, I hope he doesn't listen to this. But he'll talk to you as if you know what said movie is, and it's like, wasn't even born yet.
He was tweeting about one last week when we talked about Saltburn. Him and Amanda were talking about a film from 19, it's either 89 or 98 or something like that, and it was called Brideshead Revisited. And I don't know what it's about, I've never heard of it, I've never seen it, but apparently it's a bit like the same vibe as Saltburn, obviously without the mad twists and stuff. See, they're talking about it and they're talking between themselves about this film. I thought it was just going to be another one of that. And I think me and Ewan were sitting going,
what are they talking about?
But it's one of those ones that's just always been a thing. And obviously, Ian's very different, and even Amanda, they're very different to us. But I love having them on the podcast because it's a total different perspective of like cinema and stuff. And he's a massive James Bond fan. And I've talked about this before. I've still not seen hardly any of the James Bond films, the classic ones anyway. So I thought that'd be a really good kind of series we could do. Two different perspectives, like first time watching plus him being a total expert on it. You think as an expert on random films, imagine ones that he actually loves, you know? So that might be an idea that comes in the future. But yeah, more cinema trips, more episodes that we can talk about. Like today, talking about two films that we saw at said cinema. And the first one I wanted to talk about was one of the, or both of them actually, our Best Picture nominees for 2024. I've done so well this year seeing them. I'm kind of leaving it to the wire to complete it. but that always happens. I remember in 2020, I saw Parasite at the cinema on the day of the Oscars. And I was like, ugh, I need to kill time. I think I went myself. I went to see it. I think my good friend Angie texted me and said, you need to see Parasite. And I went, right, okay. So I decided to go on my own, I think. And then I watched the Oscars when I go home, and it won Best Picture. And I was so happy I watched it, you know. So I've done so well this year. I think I've only got about two left to see out of the 10.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I've been pretty good.
There's so many, though.
10 every year. Yeah, but the good thing about it is a lot of them, I don't know if it's a good thing, maybe it's not a good thing, but a lot of them kind of overlap in different categories. So, like, the five best directors also directed the best pictures. And I think there's that debate, like, should best director, should that not just be the winner of the best picture?
No, it's a different thing.
But I suppose it's a different thing. More goes into it, I suppose. The best, the whole best picture is the whole thing, I guess.
Yeah.
You know. But there's a couple of things, like, for example, if it's best actor and best actress, a lot of those films aren't nominated for best picture, but I still think they're big awards, so I try to watch those films too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I watched one on Netflix last week called Naiad, and Annette Bening is up for best actress, and what's her name, who's in Thing Me With It? Jodie Foster is up for Best Supporting Actor, Actress. And I was so happy that I watched that one because I was like, oh yeah, they're both
Is that
nominated.
What she's in?
Yeah.
Do you know, you just see like clips on social media, her kicking about. I'm like, what's
well,
she doing?
She's in a Sky TV series about a True Detective thing. She's now two.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's maybe HBO with Sky or maybe Max. I think it's the same thing. But she's in that too. She's busy now.
Damn.
So I watched that one. It's about it's based on a true story. It's about a swimmer called Diana Nyad, and she decides to swim from Miami to Cuba in the one go. It takes 70 odd hours to do it. So, the story on that, really interesting, really good.
I've not seen that.
But not up for Best Picture, but they two are up, so that was worth watching. So, we will do. I'm hoping to do an Oscars predictions podcast. Next week before the Oscars.
Just whilst we're on the topic of what Oscar movies we've watched and what we haven't watched, on the previous episodes, Chris tried to call me out. This is a really serious.
Did I call you out? Or you,
yes.
Did he not call you out?
No, you called me out.
Okay.
Chris tried to say that I wasn't on that episode with Ian, Amanda, and Ewan because I just hadn't watched the film.
You can speak a bit louder, by the way. Just sound like you're whispering.
I know, but this is really important.
Oh, it's your indoor voice.
So
oh,
I need
no.
everybody to really pay attention. No, yeah, Chris tried to say I just didn't bother going to see the movie, so therefore I wasn't on that episode.
And what movie was that?
Poor Things. Now, I was asked, can you go see Poor Things? Make sure you see Poor Things because I want a female perspective on the movie, female point of view. I thought, yeah, that's fine, definitely go see it. Trying to get a time to go see it, that was fine. Chris then told me, oh, by the way, there's no really any pressure for you to go see Poor Things because I've got a date with Ewan, but I've asked Dean and Amanda to do it because we're doing it Friday night, and I, as you can see, I'm a cup leader. I do scouts, and Friday nights I do scouts, and you says, basically, I don't need you anymore, Amanda's taking your position. So I thought, do you know what, see in protest, I'm not going to go see Poor Things, right? Thought, nah, see Wednesday, I had that day planned out, I was going out of town, go to the cinema, do other bits and bobs, thought, nah, I'm just not doing it, and protest, spit my dummy at the pram. So I've still not seen it, but it's not my fault. Chris said, I don't need you for the episode anymore, I've got Amanda Beveridge.
Well,
which, let's be honest, Amanda's probably 10 times better than what
not at all. Not at all. It was her birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Amanda.
Happy birthday. Did you text her?
I did, of course. I wrote on our Facebook, happy birthday to the Deveridge.
The Deveridge, yeah.
Did you hear that bit we're talking about?
I do listen to the episodes, by the way.
Okay, well, three things to say to you. Number one, I can only apologise about the whole scenario. I'm a big enough person to say I'm sorry. Number two, I don't determine your life. I know sometimes it feels like it, I do, right?
You do.
If we aren't doing the podcast, shouldn't determine your interest in the film.
I know, but because the type of person I am, I just was like, oh, stick it to the man. No,
you should know the type of person
I'm not.
I, am.
I was like raging. I thought, do you know what? I'm not eating anymore. That's fine. I won't see the movie.
I understand because obviously before now, you didn't have the card where, you know, the fact you've already seen a film, you could essentially have went to see Poor Things almost feeling like for free if you'd had the card.
If I had the card, but the fact that I need to pay for it and I'm skint. Mm-hmm. So
well, you have paid for it. You've paid for the card.
Well, so I paid for the card.
You can go
that's
now.
That's fine. But at that point, I was like, how's this?
Okay, and number three, the last thing I'm going to say on this, then we're going to move on swiftly,
yeah,
is you've got until next week then because we're doing the Oscars podcast predictions.
I know.
So you could still go see it and still talk about it.
I know, I'm going to go see it.
Okay.
And now I've just got over it. I've like let it go.
But now you've said
I
it on...
I had that vent, right? And now I can move on with
you've
my
said
life.
It on air. You have to go and see it now.
I will go see it.
And I think you'd really enjoy it. And the reason I'm saying I think you should definitely go and see it is because I am pretty confident I think that Emma Stone is going to win the Oscar for that film.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, there's been some buzz.
I was going to say, so. I don't know if she's been my favourite performance of that category. What an amazing category that is. We'll talk about it next week. But the five actresses up this year were all just like, how do you pick a winner here? You know what I mean? Now that I've seen Nyad, seen Annette Bening, who was great in that as well. Poor Things, Carey Mulligan in Maestro is incredible. Sandra Hüller in Anatomy of a Fall, brilliant. And then, who is the other one? In Killers of the Flower Moon. I can't remember the actress's name right now. But yeah, I feel bad because I did have her. Lily Gladstone, her name is. That was very majestic. You were trying to reach the canicle.
That can just so far away from me.
But I'm glad you
I
got.
Let's put it in the middle.
I'm glad you got that off your chest.
Yeah, thanks. I was just listening to the podcast on my walk up to work.
Well, I really hope you didn't get a spoiler.
And I was, no, I stopped before you get, as you start talking about the movie. But I was just on my walk up to work, like loving life, and then you just try and call me out, and then Ian tried to say I was slacking. I think that's what he was talking about. So I promise I'm not. I'm actually doing my job. Sometimes.
Sometimes. All right, well, let's do a nice speedy transition there. And let's talk about a film we actually both have seen.
Yes.
Because we've seen both of these films together.
Oh, how lovely. Oh, that was really weird.
Okay. All right, so a film that we saw this week as our first trip back to the cinema as Unlimited members. We've still not got our physical cards. We had an absolute nightmare trying to get the tickets with our temporary passes.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
The guys were actually quite funny for doing it. But
they make it so complicated. They don't make it easy for themselves. Why give you such a long number to type
that
in?
That's very true. But
and then as well, it turns out if your card is then in the post, you can't use the temporary pass.
Well, that
pass.
Doesn't make any sense because my card's clearly been in the post the past couple of days and we just saw this film. So,
yeah.
It must be.
Sort it out, Cineworld.
Sort it out, Cineworld. We're glad to be back.
Thanks for having us.
First film I want to talk about is this one right here. It is called The Holdovers. I say right here because I'm showing it to the camera. On if you're watching the video version on YouTube, it is The Holdovers that is probably still going to be in cinemas. It is written by David Hemmingson and directed by Alexander Payne, starring Paul Giamatti, Devane, who won the BAFTA, I believe, for this role as Best Supporting Actress, Joy Randolph, and Dominic Sessa. Alexander Payne, famous director, for directing films such as, let me just get up on IMDb just now, directing films such as Matt Damon in Downsizing 2017, Nebraska 2013.
Did you?
I never saw it actually.
Downsizing?
I did actually fancy it, you know.
No.
Election 1999.
Don't know.
Don't remember it at all. So I saw the name.
Finally, woohoo, it's a good one.
I know. I saw the name Alexander Payne. I thought I recognised it, but obviously not.
No.
But yes, we saw this, and this was one that Ian recommended to us when we did the episode about Leave the World Behind, I believe. I think he recommended this to us. And I was going to watch it. I did find a stream of it, right, which I definitely admitting, but I did find a stream. And I was like, okay, I'm trying to watch all these Oscar films. And then I was like, do you know what? No, we were kind of talking about the cinema and stuff, and we're maybe going to get our card back. So I said, right, I'll save it. And then, you know, as films are supposed to be seen, I'm a big believer in that. Best movie experiences are when you see it. You know, when you're zoned in, you've got the great sound, you're in a dark room, big screen. Are you okay?
I thought I was
No, sneezes away.
Sorry.
But we decided to finally go and see it in the cinema, and I was absolutely delighted to say that this was our first one back in this new regime of Cineworld Unlimited.
Yeah, it was a good one.
So, the film is about a kind of boarding school based in the 1970s.
Yep.
And this young man called Mr. Tully. What's his first name? They called him Mr. Tully the whole time.
Tully?
Yeah. You know?
Oh.
His name is Angus Tully. I suppose.
I'm going to say Alan for that, really. Alan.
All right, Alan. Angus Tully. And when it started, basically it's like these kind of boys at this all-boys boarding school, mm-hmm. they're kind of bickering, they're stealing each other's stuff, they're doing that sort of stuff. And I was thinking it was going to be like a very boy movie, which you know you're not really supposed to say anymore. I thought it was going to be a bit like Dead Poets Society, which is a brilliant movie, and one of Rachel's favourite, my sister's favourite movies of all time. I thought it was going to be another one of those, just about
but
these
like,
kind
of... Yeah, I thought it was going to be about like Breakfast Club, like kind of, I don't know, that kind of vibe of... Like getting up to mischief.
Cast the characters all in the one area, kind of bickering and stuff like that. But then about, and we won't do any spoilers, but, well, I guess if you're listening to this episode, you've probably seen it, but a lot of the boys in Angus's class who are going to be there over the Christmas holidays, they'd go on a trip with one of the other boys' dads.
Yeah, they get out of...
Being in school.
Holding over.
Yeah. Oh, good callback.
As
or as it's called. Yeah. And Paul Giamatti's character, the teacher, he can't get a hold of Angus Tully's parents to get permission for Angus to go with them. So Angus has to stay on the boarding campus with this teacher that he doesn't get along with. And the film is all about their relationship and how just spending time with each other in this kind of like celebratory time and how they're able to kind of bond and kind of become not friends but acquaintances and really connect over family and problems in life and that sort of thing. And it was an absolutely outstanding movie, and I'm going to see it, and I'm going to mention this to Ian next week on the podcast, and he says he's going to have seen this film before we talk about it as well. Out of all the Best Picture nominees for this year that I've seen, this has been my favourite, and it was released in 2023, and I didn't have a clear film of the year for 2023 on my letterbox. I had Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, and I really did enjoy Guardians 3. Really did. It was the best of the new Marvel films, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And this one, The Holdovers, totally is taken over.
Taken over, well.
That number one spot for 2023. So, and the reason I say it's not a particularly strong year is because there's been films I'd watched and stuff that have just been like, I put that number three, number four. I didn't have that clear, like, yet these are my favourite ones. But this one was so absolutely brilliant. Everything that we kind of look for in a movie, but we had this conversation when we came out, was in this movie. Yes, the technical stuff's great. Like, it's shot really beautifully, and the acting's great, and the writing's great, and the character work's great, and all that sort of stuff. But just in terms of, like, hitting all the spots of what a good movie should be.
Yeah, it's, like, one that I would definitely 100% watch again, or go out of my way to watch again.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say it's not like a kind of comfort movie, but it was just so heartwarming and like wonderful and just so like well-rounded and closed up, and it didn't make you overthink or leave you questioning things or hitting you hard in the heart and the soul, being like, oh god, that must have been really tough. It was just like a lovely movie. Like, I went home and recommended to my dad. I was like, Dad, go see it. You'll love it.
Yeah, I reckon your dad would like this. But
and he listens to the podcast, so hi, Dad.
But I mean, like, also, Paul, welcome on the podcast anytime. and that was to Iora's father, Paul, not Paul Giamatti, who's in this film. But Paul Giamatti, if you're on this, more than welcome.
Join us.
Moan. but yeah, so, yeah, there is issues in the film, though. Like, obviously, you're saying, like, it's so lovely and it's like a warm hug. It is because of the relationships, but there are some moments in there.
There are some really like hard-hitting moments, and but I think that's what I liked, because what's the actress's name?
Divine.
Her character.
Divine Rudolph.
She.
I think that's how you pronounce it.
I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but she's like a grieving mother. Going through that. Did we say it was set at Christmas time?
Yeah. Well, I didn't say that, but I said that they're over Christmas.
Set over like the Christmas break. So straight away when I got that information, I was expecting like really like dramatic, intense stuff from her about like her son and it's Christmas. And you didn't get it because she was just like trying to live her life, because that's what, well, I don't know, ain't a mother, never lost a child. So like you don't know how you would act, but I just expected it to be more intense and dramatic, mm-hmm. and it just wasn't. It was so there. Like, she was a grieving mother, but she continued on with her day because that's what you need to do. And then that's she had her do, moments of, like, being drunk at the Christmas party and crying or whatever, which was lovely to see that. But then you then move on. It's not a Debbie Downer. It's not a, like, I don't know what I'm trying to say here. Help me out.
But
it wasn't like a sole thing for her. She wasn't just a grieving mum. Mm-hmm. She was like the...
She's still a powerful woman.
The caterer?
A caretaker, yeah. I mean, she like, when she was in the room, like, she was the boss. You know what I mean? Like, she totally took over. And she, it was really nice for her to have that moment when, yes, it is, because she's drinking and stuff, but she has that moment where she's able to just kind of let it all go, and she's emotional about losing her son. We did say we weren't going to spoil it, but there you go. And then, like...
We don't see that in the movie. That's
no, I know. And then she comes out and she's like going home and stuff, and she just realizes that she's kind of looking after these two guys,
mm-hmm.
and she just kind of sobers up and she's like, "What are you talking about? Go and help him."
Yeah.
And kind of brings them back down to earth. So her performance was incredible. She's been up for Best Supporting Actress, as I said. Yeah. So she was brilliant as well. We want to talk about the guy that plays Angus Tully, the young guy, because we both came out thinking, like, Dominic Sessa, his name is. We're both thinking, like, what else is he in? Like, can we watch stuff?
Mm-hmm.
So I think he was born in 2002.
So shut up.
So he's incredibly young.
You're kidding.
And believe it, 25th of October 2002, he was almost exactly a year after you were born. And this is
that Adam's apple is not the Adam's apple of a 21-year-old.
But this is his first ever movie.
You are kidding. What?
Can you believe it? So I don't know if he's done other things. Like theatre and scenes and stuff, or extra work in that.
Because he was, like, watching him, it was so, there was just something about him, like, quite charming and
quite...
There was
some, but quirky.
Boisterous and, like, you just want to give him a shake, but, like, just going to get your head in gear and...
Get your act
just,
together.
Yeah. Like, just so...
But that is the point. That is what Paul Giamatti's character's trying to say to him. And even later on in the film, where, like, he's going to get into some more trouble, even it... Obviously, he's happy to admit it when they kind of have this nice moment, but, like, even when he's still not a big fan of him, he's like, you're so clever. Like, why are you doing this? Stop being like this. You are, like, you've got so much potential and stuff. And that was so nice, because that is what happens. You've seen it loads of times in school, right? We are not that long out of school. At least you're not. there was plenty of people that needed to give themselves a shake.
Yeah.
But you knew, because you're in their class, they're actually so brainy. Like, they would be fine if they did give themselves a shake and actually applied themselves and stuff. And I don't mean to sound like a teacher there, but I just mean, you know, like, if you wanted to actually work and, like, do something, you could. And that's kind of what his character's all about. And he's going through some stuff too. There was loads of really, like...
Beautiful story.
Yeah. Loads of real things that you could connect with there.
Yeah.
But yeah, just a brilliant film that was really funny. The humour is...
Just
lands so much.
Yeah.
Because it's a nice break from a lot of the kind of emotional problems that a lot of them are going through.
Yeah. And it was the right moments and just enough. Like, it wasn't
overdone.
It never took away from it. Like, I hate that when it's like you're trying to be funny. Mm. Just it'll be funny if you let it be funny.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, highly recommend it. I mean, also, it's like set in the early 70s, so there's a lot of like 60s, 70s music and stuff as well. So, that was really cool. I loved the way it was shot. It was shot like old school as well. At times you would think it was like a Paul Thomas Anderson film or a Wes Anderson film, maybe not quite as extreme or as anal as they guys are, but like the way the school was shot with the snow and all this sort of stuff,
beautiful,
was really, really nice. So I'll definitely be adding this one to the collection when it comes out. It isn't approved. We actually spoke about that. That's something we could do. We have to go through these DVDs and Blu-rays. We have to there's ones in here I've still not seen. I've been trying to do it for years.
We'll do that. We've said it on the podcast, so we're going to do it. We're going to go through the Blu-ray collection.
Yeah, it has to be done.
I've got a question, though, for this movie, for the holdovers. Really important question. And I don't know when was it officially released?
Let me check.
Because this will play into the answer of my question.
Okay, so I'm scrolling on IMDb just now. Release date. So, and it premiered at festivals last summer, but it didn't get a release until January.
Right, okay. No, because it's set mm-hmm. over Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas is quite a big thing.
The answer to your question is yes.
Is this class as a Christmas movie?
Good question.
I thought that halfway through the movie. I thought, could you class that as a Christmas film?
Well, my question to you is, I'll answer your question with another question.
Oh, don't do that.
What do you classify as a Christmas movie? What's the
For me, a Christmas movie has to be about Christmas and the Christmas celebration.
Okay.
Like, whether it's that, it's about like that, the day, the run up, the end goal is Christmas, or the whole thing is Christmas. I've never seen Die Hard, but Die Hard to me is not a Christmas movie.
You've totally null and voided that statement when you said you've never seen it. How can you possibly say that? You've never seen it.
Because it's just like, I don't know. You've never seen it? How can it be a Christmas movie?
How can it not be?
Because how is it meant? It's supposed to be joyous and like wholesome and happy and like...
Die Hard is.
But it's called Die Hard. Die Hard. And it's like action and like, yeah. People will die and get shot.
And hard die.
Blow up. Well.
Yeah. That's a different type of movie. Yes, but... The message of the film, of Die Hard, is that he is doing stuff to save his family so he can get home and celebrate Christmas with them. That, to me, is a Christmas film.
But that's not joyous. That's like intense and dramatic. It's like, am I going to have my family like within a couple of hours, or am I going to die on Christmas Day and I'm going to be sitting eating a turkey by myself?
Well, it's Christmas Eve.
Right, well, same thing. You still be alone eating turkey.
There's two things then that you can classify as a Christmas film. Is it about Christmas? Is it set at Christmas? Those are your two criteria, right?
Right.
Because obviously you can have a Christmas film that starts in summer and builds up to it. It's not all set at Christmas. You know what I mean? And it, I don't know, I'm just using it as an example.
I thought, is it a movie? I don't know.
I don't know, and that could be a Christmas film because it finishes at Christmas time, you know. However, my criteria has always been, is it set at Christmas? If it's set at Christmas, then it counts, you know. Planes, Trains and Automobiles, not a Christmas movie, it's set at Thanksgiving. However, because of that time of year, it's covered in snow, they're trying to go home for the holidays to be with their family. To me, that's a Christmas movie. I'll watch it every year at Christmas.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my criteria.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks for clarifying.
I've been thinking about that since I've watched this movie. Is it a Christmas movie?
Well, you hear a couple of Christmas hymns, which was
Which was why I was thinking, like, there's also hymns in it which were beautiful. Mm-hmm. They're just lovely.
You liked them?
I did.
Yeah, I absolutely loved this movie, all joking aside. And my favourite movie I've seen in absolutely ages, especially at the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Not seen a film like this in ages. Yes, I left Saltburn thinking, I've got lots to think about, and it's really sitting with me. And like, like those moments, Barry Keoghan really changing, you know, the way the film is. That Saltburn, there's just a vibe of the film that is so hard to capture. It's almost like it's got that it factor of a film that there's something special about it.
Yeah, because there's it's like a buzz.
And there's
like
a buzz about the film.
Yeah. Buzz about the film, but like the film, like there's just something about it that's like. Watching it, I don't know, I just feel like I'm like, oh, what?
Absolutely.
I physically feel a certain way when I watch it.
And you can't take your eyes off Barry Keoghan, he's just totally electric in the film and stuff. So that's a film I saw recently and I was like, wow. The Iron Claw, another film that I was like, for personal reasons, was like, I really want them to get right. And they did, and it was really well done and really well acted and stuff like that. But it's been a while since I've properly invested in the film. I've loved the characters. I totally bought into the story. I was 100% in the movie.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting. We didn't know what it was about. We went in going, we don't know what this is about.
Didn't read anything before that. I hadn't seen any like interviews or anything like that. So I was just so unsure. Not unsure. That's not the right word. I was so... I don't know what the right word is for that. I'm not unprepared. I don't know what I'm... I was just so like, no expectations, no...
Yeah, totally recommended, and it's not going to win Best Picture or anything like that. You know, I would like a couple of them maybe to get recognition for it, but just politically, the way it works, the bigger films will win. But I liked it better than Oppenheimer, I liked it better than Barbie.
Yeah, if you just want like a standalone movie, it is what it is. You can watch it and come away and get on with the rest of your day, but really enjoy it. This is your movie.
Yeah.
This is a good movie night movie.
And Paul Giamatti, I feel like he's someone that's been around for so long, but I haven't seen him in anything. But he's so good. And did you ever have, I don't know if it's different with guys and girls, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
what are you going to ask?
Did you ever have anybody like in school, like a member of staff or a teacher or something like that, that you like, you just really liked, like you just had, you felt as if he's my favourite teacher, she's my favourite teacher, like I've got that bond with you, you're kind of relying on them to make sure it's a good day, you feel like they've got your back.
Yeah, definitely.
I totally had that.
But I was also like a proper teacher's pet.
I probably was as well. My friends listen to this, we'll go, well, so you were as well. But yeah, you know what I mean? Just having that connection with them.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's really, really...
I got on with all my teachers.
Yeah, so did I. I'm just saying there was a few in particular.
But yeah, there was definitely a couple. My drama teacher.
Yeah, me too.
I never took drama until 6th year, but I was always involved in the drama department. And yeah, all them, all the drama department, because it's the drama department.
Exactly.
Like it's, yeah.
So I'm looking through some of Paul Giamatti's credits.
But where
here.
Do you go with that? Teachers and...
Well, that's just what it's about, isn't it?
Like, because he plays teacher. I switch on.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, he's...
like, when are you... What's his leading to?
He's connected with them, and then it kind of it comes full circle. I'm trying not to spoil stuff. All right, what's...
I know, please don't spoil it. Don't spoil
there's
it. Just go watch it, everybody, okay? Just trust us on this one.
There's other stuff he's in. Straight Outta Compton, is he? San Andreas with a Rock, is he?
He's
really?
In Fred Claus.
I so he is.
He plays Santa. That's where I know him from.
The Amazing Spider-Man 2, I don't remember that at all. What? He's in Saving Mr. Banks. He's in the 2013 Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
He's in 12 Years a Slave. He's
Who is he in 12 Years a Slave?
He's Freeman.
I've not watched that movie in a long time.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so, I mean, is every film, does he play a character like this with like his eye like being commented on, like his lazy eye, or is that put on for it?
That's
like,
I was actually...
Oh my God, he's in Man on the Moon.
I should have looked at this. Is that actually real, or is that just makeup prosthetics?
I don't know.
I think I've never really noticed it before. I think it's just...
Or maybe it's just accentuated.
Like I don't know. Can you Google it?
I'm on the trivia just now. This is really bad. We should have done this before.
We really should have done notes before. But I just enjoyed the movie. I didn't walk into it too much. I just wanted that to be what
I know, exactly.
That's what I liked. Whereas the other one that we're maybe going to talk about, researched, I was like, ooh...
Dominic Sessa's on-screen debut. Sessa had only acted on stage in plays.
Wow.
In Massachusetts before acting in this movie. Unsatisfied with the traditional casting auditions, the filmmakers had decided to reach out to drama departments in the areas where they were location shooting and discovered Sessa in an open call to audition. They also ended up using Deerfield Academy to film several scenes.
Well, that's the kind of luck that you want in the acting world. Bloody hell.
Paul... Human, his name is Paul Giamatti's Lazy Eye, was Paul Giamatti's idea and started out as a prank on co-star Dominic Sessa before being incorporated into the script.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
Damn.
So, yes, it is prosthetic done.
That's so interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah, so totally recommended. And that is The Holdovers, my favourite to win Best Picture at the Academy Awards. So, yeah, The Holdovers, great film. And another film that is up for Best Picture at this year's Oscars is something,
like
I don't know, is another one that's going to go totally under the radar, something that we both enjoyed, not quite as much as The Holdovers and some of the other Best Pictures, like Anatomy of a Fall was really good, and I loved Oppenheimer and Barbie and all these big films and stuff, but one that's really going to go missed, I think, is called The Zone of Interest, and it is a World War II film, and it's basically set next to, I don't know if it is Auschwitz or it's a concentration camp, but
I'm sure it is.
But it's set as a house next door to a concentration camp, and it's about the family living their lives next door to it. And the father of the family is like one of the kind of chief in command of running the concentration camp, and it's Auschwitz, right? Okay, so it's
the commander.
There you go, the commander of Auschwitz, right? So it's a total like, when you immediately think of that, you go, okay, we're going to now hate these characters. They're clearly bad people. They're in control of this concentration camp. The person, the commander, must be a bastard.
Yeah, they're going to be like ugly characters that are like...
killing Jews and hating all this stuff. But what the film is actually is about if you were to remove that whole aspect of it and you watch their life. And I particularly enjoyed how the film was shot. I know that sounds really wanky, but I'm a film guy. So the first thing that comes to my mind when it's like thinking about the way the film was made and stuff like that is it looked as if they've set up multiple cameras in... the house where they were shooting.
Oh, no, we're really going into it right film. Straight away. There you go.
Yeah. Hey, what are you going to talk about?
I thought you were going to talk about the film in general and then get into the nitty gritty bits.
All right. What do you think of the film?
It's so nice.
What do you want to talk about? Oh, actually, Like, listen, you're reviewing.
I know, but
talking
I
about bits of the film, I'm like,
I thought we thought more about the story first and then get in. Yeah.
Right, go on then.
Sorry. Share podcast.
No, I feel silly now. I feel like I can't talk about why I like
no,
the film.
No, because I was just going to say, yeah, I've like watched and it was no that on
I was going to say, yeah, I agree. Moving on.
No, because I've watched and so I want to talk about the nitty-gritty.
Okay.
Bits.
So why did you interrupt me when I was talking about the,
because
the stylistic aspects?
I thought we'd talk more about the story, the so people
picture,
understand that.
The artistic value of the cinematic experience.
Right, you're winding up now.
Right, well, we saw it at the GFT. We saw it at the Glasgow Film Theatre. So I don't know if
my first time going to the GFT, by the way.
Yeah.
It was
lovely. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah. Don't know what to expect. It's quite big, a lot of space. I always thought it would be really, really small. And really compact.
Well, it is compared to other cinemas.
But no, Chris, we walked into the room where the screen was, the cinema room, the theatre, and we walked in and there was hundreds of seats and loads of space and very wide.
Yes.
But it's amazing to like really tall, dark, skinny cinema.
Yeah.
Like, and really, you know what I mean? You go and you're like, ooh.
Yeah.
Need to be really quiet.
Yeah, yeah.
But I walked into this one and I felt really calm and lovely and welcomed and I found my seat and it was lovely.
It's a bit like a university lecture hall, I think.
Yeah. I don't, it was just something, it was really nice. It was just
I
lovely.
Like it.
Lovely experience.
I was giving you this rant as well. I was like, they should bring out these small independent cinemas. They should have a loyalty card.
They should have a loyalty card.
Because people...
And they should be doing stuff for the Oscars and getting people to go see movies.
Cineworld are doing that. See this next week. They're showing all the films.
Thank goodness I've got a card now.
Yeah, exactly. No, but the smaller films should do that. They should really, like, they would bring in people who want to support that. See, like, the wee pensioners that are free during the day. You know what I mean? They would go and see
the
these
wee pensioners.
And we would go, I would like to go and
but
support...
But wee pensioners are trekking into the town.
There was loads of them when we went there to see it. That was the majority of the audience. And it's unreserved seats, which is a throwback, but I don't know if I like it. I like having my seat.
That's just because that's you, though.
That's what I said. I don't know if I like it.
I know, but I don't mind me. That. But you're even particular about where you sit in the bus.
On the bus?
Yeah, you are.
No, I'm not.
I'm not like about where you sit in the bus.
You can't make a decision.
I can make a decision.
Like she did decide what we're going to do the podcast tonight. And she decided what she was going to have for dinner and I couldn't believe it. So what was I talking about before you so rudely
Sorry.
Interrupted me about about the way the film is made? Yeah, and I noticed, I think you did say this when we came out of the cinema the first time, is that you noticed it as well. It's like they didn't, it wasn't almost as if there was a camera person.
Everything was static.
Yeah, they weren't like following the character. I mean, they did do it at some point.
There, there was movement, but there was no turns and rotations and tilts, and it was all very like head on.
Yeah.
Everything's in shot.
And it's almost like the camera's like sitting on a shelf or a table or something, and
watching
there's another
them.
Camera in the other room also sitting on a table or a shelf, and the character's like walking around like doing everyday mundane tasks. He's like cleaning the kitchen and he's like turning lights off and taking off his shoes, and he's just walking around going to bed, and it was just cutting between the cameras almost as if like A, we're in the house with him, which makes it very naturalistic, but also it's like the whole point of the film is to be like, this is what these people's lives are like.
Yeah.
Next to, so these are the villains, these are the heels, these are the people we
these
don't like.
These are the Nazis.
Yeah. But then they're somewhat trying to make you connect to them and relate to them in some way, and then you go, I'm not supposed to like these people. I'm not supposed to relate to them in any way, you know?
Yeah. Well, you're right, because I watched an interview.
Oh, nice. Really nice segue.
And it was the director, and they were talking about how they made the film, and basically they built the house. Or
they built the house?
They didn't, that's no, wrong word. They refurbed a house.
All right.
So the house, as far as I know, the actual house it's based on is still there, kind of, maybe. So they didn't use that house, they used like a house like a block away.
Okay.
Or like however many yards. And they refurbed that and refitted that, and they fit it with cameras. So it wasn't like an actual big movie camera that was stuck in the middle of a kitchen dining room. It was like they were all planted. So then when the actors go in, that's their space. And that everybody else crew-wise is like out of their space. So they had the freedom. And none of the actors were mic'd either. Mm. So everything, all the like it was all just picked up naturally. And it gave them the kind of... the thought that this is real, this is like my life method, but like
you're right,
it let them kind of fit into the realism of it, because that was the other thing that they spoke about in the interview, was because of the topic because it's about, yeah, it's about a family that are living beside the concentration camp. It's about the family. It's not about the fact that he's a commander of the concentration camp. It's not about the Nazis. It's not about the war. It's not about the concentration camp. It's about the family, that they wanted that to feel real, and they didn't want to like glamorize anything or make them seem better than what they are, because we know that they're Nazis, and that's not a good thing.
That's what I mean. Yeah, we're just in society, like, we just don't like those people. We don't like the stories we hear about these people, that we just assume in our heads that they were all evil. But then you see, obviously, in documentaries and stuff, clearly a lot of brainwashing going on, all this sort of stuff. But you forget that they had lives and stuff.
Yeah,
they had to live somewhere.
They, like, tended to the garden, and they cooked and they cleaned, and they put the children to bed, and they read them stories, and they got to play with their toys, and... Mm-hmm. Like,
you feel bad for the kids, don't you?
Yeah.
Because it's just in the middle, they have no clue what's going on.
Yeah, they
just think
no
that's their dad's
idea.
Work or whatever.
Yeah.
And do you not think, we kind of talked about this as well, do you not think it was great, the fact that you never actually see inside the camp?
Yeah, it's
you
so clever.
You don't see any death, you don't see any of this, but you hear constantly screaming, you hear gunshots, you hear...
You hear the fire being started.
Trucks and vans pulling in.
It was so...
Quite daunting.
So clever. Because I was expecting... When we decided to go see this film, you read out two descriptions or two summaries of like two possible movies we're going to go see. And I was like, Concentration Camp, Zone of Interest, like that one. Like, we're going to go see that one. And I was expecting like a bit of shock factor. Whether it's like... I'm trying to think of other movies or something like that. Like The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, like that. Like pure...
You know, it made me want to go rewatch it,
huge moment. Or something like that. Like some like a shock factor, and you didn't really get it, like, from it, because it was so mundane and so real and so normal, which just was so interesting. And literally their garden wall is the wall of the concentration camp on the other side. So like, that's how close
and
proximity that they were, and that's real. That's not just there for dramatic effect or put into the story to add a bit more to it. That was real.
And as a kind of film guy, I watch a lot of films. I watch a lot of independent stuff, and, you know, not big blockbuster stuff, and you know what I mean. So I see films like this all the time, and it's quite normal to me where there's not really a beginning, a middle, and an end. And the story's tied up, and that's it. As a viewer, we are satisfied with what we've just seen. There's a lot of times where films are left up to your interpretation.
Yes.
And also, you should watch what happens. Like, a story, a film doesn't need to be like a big storyline with like death and like a big twist and stuff. If that is in a film, then great, that's that film. But a film can also be us telling you the story of someone living in a house, or someone growing old.
Yeah, the simplicity of it.
You know what I mean? It's just, it doesn't matter what happens, it's just, this is what we're showing you, this is what we're telling you as a story. So, coming out of the cinema, I was a bit like, we just watched what the family life is like.
Yeah.
There's no big twist, there's no big, you know, dramatic change in attitude and stuff. There obviously are things that happen to the characters and the family and stuff like that. But we just kind of watched what it would have been like to live there. And then there was a really, really, really interesting moment right at the end. And obviously, you see, can we talk about it? I feel like we can need to. There's time jumps all the time in films and stuff, and it's like 5 years later, and this is what we're seeing. But it's like, obviously, set at World War II.
Yes.
And then the characters, the guy's name is Rudolf, played by a very good actor, actually, called Christian Friedel, who was excellent, the main guy. He's like walking down these stairs, and he just starts like dry heaving. He just starts like trying to be sick, and nothing's coming out, because he's obviously probably recognizing the severity of the situation. He kind of knows, obviously, he must know, people in this situation must know at the time what they were doing, right?
But to them, I don't think they saw it. They never saw it
as a problem.
As a problem, they saw them fixing something. Like, there was literally a scene, and it was just like, you're watching it, and it was just like a business meeting.
Right.
And they're talking about productivity and trying to up their productivity. And productivity is killing people. That's what they're trying to
absolutely, but
increase. And I was like, that's so weird.
But it might not be everybody. There's those people who are in charge and making these decisions.
Yeah. Oh, I obviously, there's going to be some people, and probably there were some people that were like in that feeling trapped or really realizing what was actually happening and were like, oh, this is
But he's wrong. Just, he's on his own, he's having a moment. And I just, when I, what I got from that moment is that he knows that he's not being watched. It's almost like it hits him a little bit mm-hmm. of what's going
mm-hmm.
on.
Yeah.
And that's why he starts being sick, right? And then he stops, he looks at the wall, and it's like a hard cut, the scene, to like present day.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at the wall, like he's looking at the wall, and then these like, these cleaners come in and start preparing for the day of all these like sightseeing things that people are going to go and mm-hmm. see the concentration mm-hmm. camp as a tourist attraction. And you don't, nothing happens. The cleaners are just like wiping the windows and hoovering.
Yeah.
And that's it. And we're just watching it of what that's like now. And then it cuts back to 1941 or whenever it's set. And then the film carries on. And I thought that was really interesting because obviously there's like, and here's what it's like now and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it was just really interesting where they put that moment. Like it was almost like 10 minutes before the end, not the end. It was like, yeah. Right, it was weird.
Aye.
But really effective.
Yeah, because it made me think, oh, is it, where is this going? Are we going to get hit with facts or statistics?
And the information comes up on the screen.
Real life moments or...
Yeah.
Because it came to like real life and like... But it was just kind of showing that... No, yeah, it was... obviously, things have changed. But the same tasks that were being done, right. The usual business meetings, the opening up the day for shop and... That wasn't the right English. That was opening the shop.
For the day.
You know what I'm trying to say. It's been a long day. like that's still happening, but it's happening with like a very different, like, not point of view.
Yeah, like message, like yeah. thought process, like we're celebrating.
There's the meaning behind it and the intention and all that behind
where
it.
Where we've come and
very
stuff.
Very different.
Yeah. Or how far we've come, I should say.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anything else that you saw, like, because you watched some stuff about it and you read some stuff about
it? It was actually really interesting. I saw they were talking about the sound of the movie, and very early on, the director had decided that you weren't going to see inside the camp.
Mm-hmm.
Very early on, and creating and coming up with everything, he thought he made the decision. He needed to make the decision. He knew he needed to make the decision, and he made it really early on. We're not going to see inside the camp because it's been done, and again, it's kind of glorifying something that is, we know, is tragic and horrific. So then as soon as he knew that information, he then knew that the sound of it all was going to be super important. And what was really interesting was there was two different movies, basically, that were, like, created for sound. So they had, like, movie one, which was inside the garden and the family home.
Mm-hmm.
So that was everything you would, like, see, well, not see, but hear, whether it's, like, the birds or, like, the water running or the wind or whatever it was. That was all movie one. And then movie two was inside the concentration camp. And it was, like, shouting and, like, mm-hmm. really aggressive noises and disturbing noises and, like, the fire in the trucks and whatever, and the gunshots, everything we're talking about. Yeah. And it was just really interesting how they never really blended the two together, because the family and the concentration camp never really blended the two together. They just kept it so separate. And I just thought that really not cool. That's
interesting. I mean,
cool, but yeah, it was just interesting to listen. Yeah,
I think that's kind of what, because they would do that too. It's almost like they're trying to ignore it as well. The family, because as you say, it's their work. You know, just like we have our jobs. That was their job. To go and run this thing that's murdering
that.
People.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's actually crazy to think about. And it's so funny that we now, celebrate is definitely the wrong word, but we love watching war documentaries.
Yeah.
Because it's so interesting. But it's just absolutely horrific when you think about it.
Yeah, the one bit that got me, that I was like, oh, was they'd got a delivery of post, and the mum, the mother, or the woman, the lady,
Sandra Hüller is her name, the actress. We'll talk about her in a minute.
Opens up the package, and basically hands out whatever's inside this package. And it's like, oh, like, to like the kind of maids and like nannies or whatever, and the girls that were helping in the house, like, oh, here, split it up amongst you, like, here you go. And it was as if she just get a delivery full of ASOS, the clothes. And it just kind of, I was watching it and nothing was said, but in my mind I went, please do not tell me that that is clothes from the concentration camp.
Mm-hmm. And for them
then,
to wear?
For them to wear. And then it is, that's what's said, is like, one of the girls is being bitchy and is like, oh, she took that dress, well, she's not going to fit into the same dress size as a 12-year-old girl.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God, it is. That's like the clothes and shoes of like children that are right next door that are being murdered. And like, it was so bizarre. I was like, what?
And you also commented on when you see the current day stuff, you see all the shoes and the clothes that are on display.
Oh my God.
It's so harrowing.
It's so... I don't know, there's just so much weight to it, because you never right. think anything, like the shoes you wear, you go out for your day, like you never put, yep. so it depends on the outfit I suppose, but you never put that much thought into yep. it. But for some of these people, like that's like the only thing that's left of them.
The only memory.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's there behind a glass, pane of glass, do you know what I mean? And a museum for people to wander past and say...
Take pictures of.
I wonder whose feet went in those shoes. Mm-hmm. Like, it was... I don't... Yeah. Oh, deep, man.
Very, very deep. But what we should talk about, though, is how good the film actually was made. It was very...
It was... That was another beautiful film,
I think. Beautiful film, yeah.
All things considered, it was lovely.
And it gives you a really interesting insight into what life would have been like.
Sorry.
No, go
on. I just had a thought that... With the expectations of it being about that, I said, like, kind of shock factor... What I never expected was to feel so, I mean, it was intense watching it, but I felt so calm.
Really?
Watching it, like, there wasn't, like, as much as you heard all the, it was uncomfortable hearing all the sound, but, like, watching it, like, visually, it just seemed really calming, like, the colour palette and, like, the, everything about it was so soft. Mm-hmm.
Listen to you talk about the colour palette of a movie.
I know, bloody hell, what's happened to me? Get a cinema card and think I'm a genius. But walking out the cinema, again, that whole thing of feeling satisfied, is everything rounded up. And I walked out and I still felt that really calm way of, like, I don't want to say content, but that's the only thing I can think of that's so soft enough. And it's not happy or joyous or excited, or I just felt so like at ease.
And you saw the story and that was you.
And I saw it and I witnessed it and that was fine. I can go on with life.
Yeah.
Like I never felt so, I think because I was expecting to come out feeling so like, and crying or.
Somber.
Yeah. I don't know. It was really lovely. I really liked it.
Yeah. I definitely don't think it was lovely, but. It was probably a nice kind of, it's a nice feeling to see the whole, to be satisfied with the film and see the story and then have your own kind of takeaway from it.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. But I know what you mean. I know you don't mean the story itself isn't cozy and satisfying and lovely. It's more so just like the way it's presented to you.
Yeah.
It's so well made, you know, and you go, that person done their job correctly by making this film and it's very important and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But Sandra Hüller, the main actress in it.
She was amazing.
What a year she's having, because she's up for Best Actress in Anatomy of a Fall. She's the lead in that and she's absolutely outstanding. Absolutely outstanding in that film. And then she's also in this. So obviously she can't be nominated twice. So she's not nominated for this film, but she's also, I couldn't believe it was her. When I saw her, I was like, it's her again. I just watched it in Anatomy of a Fall, mm-hmm. which is really difficult for me to say. I don't know why.
They should change that. You should be allowed to be nominated twice if you deserve it.
I know. But yeah, so she's definitely one to watch. She is a German actress. So, you know, if you live in the UK or the States or something like that, she might have made German films before that you wouldn't have seen. So I'm definitely going to keep an eye out for more of her work and stuff like that.
Yeah.
She's brilliant and maybe watch back some older stuff. But it's actually nice. It sounds so silly for see people who watch international films all the time. It's just refreshing seeing something a bit different. It's the first time I went to the cinema and I watched a full-length two-hour German movie.
You know
what I mean? The Zone of Interest. And it's like, I never went in going, oh my God, this is going to be a German film. I just watched it and really, really enjoyed it and thought it was great. But that's the beauty of the Oscars, though, isn't it? In award season, they bring out these films and you go, I would never have seen that otherwise. So, and then Anatomy of a Fall, some of it's in German, some of it's in French, some of it's in English. That's worth watching too for that reason, just for a change of pace. And yeah, some really, really good films this year. Really good films. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. See how many awards things win. And yes, there has been some snubs though. Saltburn, no nominations. The Zone of... The Iron Claw, no nominations. And films,
I don't know if I would say Iron Claw gets a nomination.
We'd get something, surely.
I don't know.
I think...
It was a good movie.
Zac Efron deserves something. I thought Jeremy Allen White... Is that his name? Guy in the Bear? Jeremy Allen White? That's his name.
I don't know. Please. Let me phone Holly. She likes him.
Please, Kerry Von Erich. He was outstanding.
Oh, he's amazing.
So, yeah, Jeremy Allen White. Yeah, that's right. Always don't doubt yourself, Chris.
Dan, darling.
I don't know. Even director could have got something. I don't know, man. But anyway, that's
but
for another
film. But then if you say that, like, everything is deserving of something.
Of course.
It's like an award for taking part.
Maybe you should work for Disney or something. That is beautiful. Everybody is loved.
I am a couple there, what can I say?
There you go. But yeah, let us know what you thought if you've watched these two films. We are really looking forward to being back at the cinema on hopefully a weekly basis. It means we can chat about some more of the more obscure films. It's quite intense right now because there's so much coming out and there's so much to see and so much to talk about. There is a bit of a sort of dry period where there's not really much going on.
There's nothing, yeah.
Like, there
all
has
of a
been
sudden,
times where we go... We can't go to the cinema tonight because there's nothing out, you know. So that's going to be interesting as well. But we're hoping that you listen along with us and watch along with us here on the Good Bit Podcast. We'll be back next week with our Oscars 2024 predictions pod.
Yep.
So until then, thanks very much for listening. Take care of yourselves, everybody. And we'll catch you all down the road.